Hello, welcome to Ono, Ross, and Carrie, the show where we don't just talk about spirituality, fringe science, and claims of the paranormal, but take part ourselves.
Yep, when they make the claims, we show up so you don't have to. I'm Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy.
And we are going to tell you more about Scientology.
You didn't expect it. You were like, there is no way they have more information.
What? Part six? Yeah,
this is impossible.
There's just a lot to tell, and you wanted it.
The last time I said we had rounded the halfway point.
Right.
Now, what I meant by that was we were a little further than the halfway point.
Right, but people are now expecting 10 episodes.
Yeah, it might not be 10, guys. It might be more like 8.
But it might.
But maybe it'll be 10. We don't actually know.
We're just telling one story at a time. And this time, we're going to tell about our visit to the Scientology Celebrity
Center
on Franklin Avenue.
In
Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Yeah, that'll catch on. Great jingle. You'd been there before, right?
I had.
I'd never been.
Oh, you never
been? I'd never been. I'd walked past. I'd wanted to go there.
Okay.
But I had not been to the Scientology Celebrity Center.
I had only been once before. But okay. So I knew it was a good brunch, good solid brunch.
You knew this.
But I also knew that they will fool you into buying alcohol. They will fool you.
Will they?
Which, now that I think of it, is weird. They're kind of anti-alcohol.
Are they?
Well, kind of. They do the whole, like, you can't audit, you can't do basically any work if you've had alcohol in the last 24 hours.
Oh, that's true, which does sound like a condemnation of alcohol. But then again, they have their whole purification rundown, keep your body clean in this chemical society, and yet so many of them smoke.
So many.
Which totally shocked me.
Although I read an L. Ron Hubbard quote recently where he said that people don't smoke enough, and that's how people get lung cancer.
Great quote, LRH. One for the ages. So we came on a Sunday for the brunch. The hotel was originally called the Chateau Elysee.
Ah, wonderful.
Or something French. Again, I'm saying it wrong.
No,
I hope
right.
We run out of French terms to say.
It's a historic building, and Scientology does this thing. They buy up historical buildings in LA.
They just bought the KCET building.
Right. Finally, like, making their Scientology
radio. Like where
radio
Sesame Street was filmed. I don't know why that makes me a little sad. but apparently they do a really good job of fixing up the buildings and preserving them and leaving the important pieces of architecture in place. So this was a hotel.
I'm picturing like Cookie Monster holding up ARC, like all the Sesame Street
characters. Oh, don't say that. That makes me so sad. C is for communication. Right, exactly. That's good enough for me. C is for communication. It's good enough for me.
Yeah, it's too mouthy.
Oh, right. ARC triangle is for me.
Reality, it doesn't mean what you think it does.
One dynamic.
Fuck.
Two dynamics.
There's gonna be too much of this. Look what I did.
Look what you
said. Anyway,
started.
I've seen that hotel a bunch of times because it happens to be right across the street from the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Oh, yeah, right there.
Popular comedy venue where I am many nights.
And where we recorded our James Von Prague Psychic Kids Network live episode.
Yep, our first live episode ever.
And that hotel's a beautiful building, about 7 stories tall, and it's got spires on top.
A beautiful outdoor conservatory, is that what they call it? Where it's like a greenhouse, but it's for like having performances.
I wasn't quite sure what that was, but it was, quite lovely from the outside. It's got a big green circus tent-like roof.
Yeah. Palm trees that are like immaculately
and gardens groomed. Outside. One that like looks like a large kind of labyrinth sort of thing, but too short, like where you can see over the top so you couldn't get lost in the labyrinth.
The first time that I went, there was a woman playing croquet by herself while someone else watched her with a clipboard. And it looked like a very confusing, very weird game of croquet where she'd like hit the ball one way and then the woman with a clipboard would write down something and then the student went back and like had to hit it the other way. And she was just doing this for like an hour. So finally I asked my waiter, what's she doing? And he was like, oh, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's just a communication thing we do. Which of course now I'm like, of course.
Yeah.
For communication, you must learn croquet.
Was she using a flamingo?
She was not.
Okay, because this was sounding very Alice in Wonderland with like the
which
little
which is one of the things
maze.
They do in a later class.
What?
Do you know about this? I just read about
you
this.
You walk through a looking glass?
No, but in one of the later indoctrination classes,
I
which
love
is
that
what they call
it indoctrination.
Someone reported that
Wow.
They were made to read Alice in Wonderland to their auditor. And if I were the student, what I would need to do is read it until I could read it without giggling. But I don't even know that that's the goal. You just have to keep telling me to read it to you over and over until it becomes like not silly and funny to me.
So this is really a public service announcement for all future Scientologists that you'll be ready then.
Yeah.
You'll know the goal.
Yeah, just don't giggle, don't
read
laugh.
Read it straight faced.
Which is so perfectly in line with our experience of like us making jokes and then being like, I acknowledge that you have made a humor.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Hadn't thought about that element. Mm-hmm. That's part of the training where they stamp the humor out of you.
Yeah, maybe. And that's sad.
Oh, it would be sad.
Yeah.
Were that true.
I'm right across from UCB.
It might not be the case, but.
Right. I don't know. I just
it would explain some things. So the hotel was built starting in 1927. Scientology started using it in 1969, but fully like bought the building in 1973.
Man, can you imagine building that big, beautiful building in 1927 and then 2 years later, you're like, womp, womp.
Wait, why 2 years later?
The crash of 29.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I didn't even think about that.
Good news right then.
1927 was the year of the first talkie film, The Jazz Singer.
Oh, okay.
And then 1929 was the year of Steamboat Willie, the first.
Hey!
Animation was sound.
So did Steamboat Willie cause the Great Depression?
If correlation implies causation, then maybe.
Okay, so Scientology bought it in the 60s, you said.
It's 73.
73. Okay, season 4 of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Got it.
Part of it is used, I guess, as housing or actual like hotel rooms. And then the upper buildings are supposed to be used for management. We did not go up there. I've talked to other friends who have been given tours where they get to go upstairs. Down on the bottom floor, they have, you know, classes that go on there. And the Renaissance restaurant.
Yes.
And so I showed up a bit early. I'd actually just come over that Sunday morning from the LA org. I'd stopped by there to meet with Roger. And so I'll tell that story later because this was about me preparing for the next coursework that I would take.
Gotcha.
But then I had a good hard out to say, oh, I need to get over to the Celebrity Center. And they'll let you go if you're going to another Scientology spot.
We should have just said that every time. Oh, shoot, got something at the Glendale org. Gotta go.
Heading over to the Pasadena org.
Yeah.
Oh, gotta get going to the Celebrity
to
Center.
Happiness.
Yeah, I got there a little early and the grounds were beautiful. Told the parking attendant, this is a good tip. Just let them know you're there to meet someone. I was going to meet you and Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And so he let me have a parking spot there. And then he kind of tailed me for a little while.
Wait, why do you have to say you're there to meet someone and not just I'm here to go to the restaurant?
I don't know, because it seemed like that wasn't good enough for him.
Huh.
But when I said I was there to meet someone, then he's like, oh, go ahead and park.
Oh, strange. Okay.
So, I don't know. Maybe that was just that one particular guy.
Huh.
But yeah, then he did walk around with me for a little bit and like, can I help you? And he was like, go away. Leave me alone.
Oh, goodness.
They're such
things to do.
They're such helicopter parents.
Yeah, though they really are.
So
they really are.
I saw that big green building, beautiful, kind of turn left from the parking lot toward the hotel itself. And it was before they'd open. Like, they don't open till 10:30 when the brunch starts. And so I had a good 20 minutes to putter around. There were a couple other people waiting there, so I chit-chatted with them a little bit. None of them seemed to be Scientologists. I was excited about this. They had an armillary sphere.
A what?
You know, like a spherical astrolabe.
That doesn't mean anything else.
It was like a lawn ornamentation, but it's like this kind of iron wrought, sphere within a sphere.
Originally, like a representation
of the celestial sphere.
What's it called?
An armillary sphere.
Got it.
I walked around, snapped a lot of pictures. I can show you guys the beautiful grounds of the Celebrity Center. Check it out on Facebook. Saw all the gardens and these big wooden oak doors, and there was like a tennis court or something like that. I didn't get too close to it, but it looked like a tennis court.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little restaurant around the back.
A different one.
Yeah, a little like stop and order stuff at the counter kind
like
of place.
Like a deli or a cafe.
Called the Rose Garden Cafe.
Ooh,
yeah.
Very nice.
So I stopped in there and actually it looked like a pretty good menu and the prices were reasonable. And they had quiche.
Oh, no.
That made me chuckle.
Of course they did. I wonder, I'm going to look this up right now, whether anyone has reported on the Scientology. No, it doesn't look like anyone besides us has touched on the strange quiche thing at Scientology. We're breaking
journalism. Scientology and quiche. What is the connection?
What is it?
So,
why does it happen?
Yeah, to the left, then there was kind of another entry door to the hotel itself and kind of a lobby-like area. And that door was open. So I went in. It was just so cool because they had these displays with all of the usual stuff, you know, Mind, Body, Thetan, over 25 million copies of Dianetic Soul, 100 weeks on the bestseller list, and all these giant posters and an e-meter, not any old e-meter, but a Hubbard Professional Mark Ultra 8 Roman Ooh. Numerals in silver.
Ooh.
And there was a little registered trademark after Hubbard, which I thought was pretty fun.
Because everyone's just dying to use that name.
You're right. For their own dastardly purposes. Anyways, I was able to kind of wander around there for a while. And like no one was there to lean over me or breathe down my neck. And I just kind of looked like I knew what I was doing when people would walk by. So mm-hmm. I just enjoyed that. Like, wow, for once, like I can just have unfettered access to a Scientology location.
Well, yeah, and by unfettered access, you just mean like actually walk around like a normal person.
Yeah, without yeah. anyone like, how can I help you? What are you trying to do? Where have you been? Are you on course?
Right.
Can I sign you up for a course? Yeah, so then you texted me around that time. You guys had shown up.
Drew drove there and I walked there. I just wanted a nice walkie-woo.
Okay, but you guys were there and I ran towards you like in a musical.
Oh, that's right. Yes, because sang. There was the Arboretum or whatever it is behind you, and then you were coming down these stairs, and I think you realized you could have a very
dramatic entrance.
Yes, very cinematic.
Because it was just a beautiful location.
I think you also ran down the stairs in that sideways way, where it's like left foot, then right foot meets left foot, then left foot, then right foot meets left foot.
Yes.
Like to the side.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It was a song and dance number.
Yeah. And we were both like, hi.
Yeah, I guess we're with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got in there. They don't have you pay up front or anything. You just get seated right. and go get your food.
Here's the thing, though.
What's the thing?
Brunch is $15.
$15.26 I spent.
But the first time that I went, as we walked in, they were like, and can we get you a mimosa? And they just kind of acted like it was part of the thing. And I was like, sure. And then they just kept being like, let me refill your mimosa. No, like, indication that, like, you're paying for these. And so the first really? Time I went, I spent like an extra $20 or something on mimosas, not knowing.
Thinking they were all annoyed. Complimentary. Well, yeah. That's sneaky. Okay, note to all of you.
Mm-hmm.
But the brunch itself was fantastic.
Yeah, it's good.
And even, you know, just with vegetarian options, there was plenty to eat.
Yeah.
There were deviled eggs.
Of course there were. And there was something that we were like, good. Is that quiche? That might be quiche. Maybe that's quiche. But it turned out to be some sort of apple frittery thing.
Yeah. I had.
But they love anything shaped like a pie.
They indeed do. Yeah, not an actual pie, but if it's shaped like one, we're in. I ate my money's worth. Let's good. Just say that.
I ate a lot of potatoes and tomatoes because you know how I love a breakfast potato and a breakfast tomato. Ooh, boy. Ooh, boy.
There was some weird like baked wrap casserole thing we couldn't identify.
Mm.
I was like, I'll try it out so you don't have to.
Okay, thank
then
you.
Fruit and pancakes. They had lots of those.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, and lemonade. Very good lemonade.
Like, oh, good.
The
yes.
real deal.
Oh, phew.
None of this like
Ross
Minute
really
Maid
likes lemonade.
Stuff. And orange juice. Lots of orange juice.
Yep. Coffee. Good coffee there.
Yeah. And you can keep going back. It's a good deal for the money.
You and I at this point are like pretty comfortable at Scientology places. But mm-hmm. poor Drew is like, what's happening?
Maybe, are they maybe you to guys, us? Are maybe you shouldn't talk so loud about what you're doing. Oh, no, it's okay. I don't know. They can't hear us.
Yeah.
There's no microphones installed in this table.
But maybe there are.
But yeah, they were very attentive in serving, but not hovering around.
And right.
No Scientology pitch whatsoever. I would fully recommend this without qualifications to anybody for a good meal.
The closest thing to a pitch is that as you're leaving, I think if you don't ask yourself, they'll offer you a tour of the hotel, which turns into a Scientology pitch.
Oh.
But it's not like it's a hard sell.
Gotcha.
It's just like that's a thing you can do.
Okay. Yeah, I even recommended this recently to our friend Zeke. She was asking for brunch recommendations. Mm-hmm. But now I realize she can't go. And you and I can't go.
So sad.
It's closed until February of 2018. And I'm actually kind of bummed because both you and I were thinking of going back.
Yeah.
Because it's a great meal.
It's a good stop on a Sunday morn.
So everybody, when it comes back in 2018, yeah, go have brunch at the Scientology Celebrity Center. But you and I were not there just for brunch. No, sir.
No, sir. We were originally going to go just for food, but then we discovered something at least as exciting.
We discovered that we could break into the industry.
Finally!
Breaking into the industry.
I love how people can just say the industry and we all know which one it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, it's the performance industry.
The
it's any kind of arts.
Industry.
Mm-hmm.
We found on their website, they were advertising these classes. One is sort of an acting workshop.
They actually have a fair number of classes. Like there was one for how to get an agent, for example.
Oh, okay. And so there was this flyer on their website for this particular class. And this was Sunday, January 10th. And the class was going to be at 12:30. So we came to eat at 10:30. We had plenty of time.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We walked around the building.
So, after paying, we then toured ourselves around a tiny bit, but then we just worked our way down the hallway where the class was going
to
be.
Well, first we had to walk into a little tiny, like, registrar office where you fill out some forms.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course you got to fill out forms. Yeah. Write down your name and address and all your personal details, of course.
Got to do that.
Turn those in.
There was a young woman there with her mom also waiting to go in.
Yeah. There were just like a few people. So at first I was thinking like, oh, it's going to be another small class.
Yeah.
And so then they let us in around the time it was supposed to start a few minutes before. Mm-hmm. And we sat around there waiting. And, you know, then the time came for the class to start. Other people trickled in.
And it got pretty full.
Yeah, I was going to say, there were maybe about 40 seats in the room. They were kind of like stadium seats.
And there were a good, what, 25 people there?
Yeah, I'd say 25, 30 people.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah, it was this little room kind of attached to the main hallway. And the style was very like kind of French Rococo. tapestries that depicted these
scenes. Okay, I got to look up Rococo. I don't know what that looks like.
So. Oh, okay.
I'm just getting a lot of gold and brocade. But yeah, okay, I think... Got it. And fancy. See, I would have just said like fancy, you know, when it looks all fancy and gold and stuff, looked like that.
It was real fancy like. And then they would continue the tapestry with paintings on the wall. And so, yeah, you're looking at kind of this view of a vineyard and a quiet lake. And then the little, again, trompe l'oeil, however you say it, painting of balustrade, like marble. Columns kind of surrounding you. Anyway, so it was, you know, fancy in there. It just felt kind of weird for the Scientology getting into the industry course.
Yeah.
And then the chairs had been set up for the three instructors, French chairs with flowers all over them. So it was just weird. It felt like all this furniture from the 1700s.
So much of the introductory Scientology stuff is kind of like your dad dressing up in a backwards baseball cap to rap about marijuana to you. It's just like, you think that this is meeting me on a certain level, or you think you've like figured out what the populace wants, but you haven't gotten there.
And you think this room was part of that?
Yeah, maybe. Just like, I'm trying to put my finger on it, but like in this case, I feel like it's like, oh, they're in the industry. They're artists. Okay.
Ah,
what's
we'll use
that?
This artistic
okay.
room.
Yeah, this one. Yeah.
Good for creatives.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Oh, maybe.
I don't mean your dad personally. I don't know, Mr. Blotcher.
He would put his baseball cap on backward for no one. It was the time for the class to start, but we're just sitting there reading our new celebrity magazines. Because they'd passed those
Which
out.
Has Juliette Lewis on the cover, I believe.
Yeah, mine had John Travolta on the cover.
Okay, great.
I learned that John Travolta...
Scientological heavy hitters.
He holds licenses to fly 11 different jet engines, including a 747.
It's really big in Scientology to talk about how many vessels you can you can master.
Ooh, there's an article... The Purification Program by L. Ron Hubbard. I'm totally going to read that.
Oh, yeah. They all the celebrity magazines have some long article by L. Ron Hubbard as if it's new. Right. Obviously not.
Right. John Travolta, they were asking him his favorite books by LRH. He's
there's too many to pick.
There's no way you can say that. And then he goes into this litany of books, you know, that he's read many times.
Yeah. So it becomes like, I don't know, 20 minutes past when it was supposed to start. And I needed to pee so bad. So it's like, okay, yeah. I'm gonna go pee. And then as I go to finally go pee, of course, I pass the people who are going to come lead the thing. So I think, oh no, I'm going to miss the beginning. But I still didn't.
No.
I just went in a side room and did something for a while.
Oh yeah. And they kept like coming in and apologize and say, oh, you know, one of our people is running late. They never said which of the three.
Right.
And so it's just a little delayed. We'll get started soon. And it was 40 minutes before they finally came in.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And there was no apology.
Yeah. And they even told us when they'd arrived. And you're right. They just like went to a side room for a while. I don't know, to confer or something. And you were saying, okay, if they don't come within 5 minutes, I say we go. You were pissed.
Yeah.
As you should be.
45 minutes. It's like, come on now.
And at this point, we had just been so familiarized with Scientology's lack of respect for everybody's time.
Totally.
Okay. Now we finally got them coming in and we get to meet our three instructors.
Yay. I bet that they will be truly experts in their field. They will have interesting, concise things to say that are usable. and nothing that they say will be vague and inapplicable. Is that how it will go?
All right. Well, I'd say it's a little bit of hit and miss there. They had been advertised on the original flyer. We'll use their real names because this is a publicly advertised class. Private career coach, Joyce Wallace.
She has coached multiple award-winning actors and filmmakers and Grammy award-winning musicians.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to her website, it's entirely a pitch for Scientology.
From the early 90s, clearly. It's a very early website.
If she is the only Joyce Wallace on IMDb, then she has one acting credit.
Oh, does she? Yeah, she told us that she's worked with many people over the years, but her biggest claim to fame when she introduced herself was that she had met L. Ron Hubbard in 1968.
Oh, that's right.
And worked with him in 1968 and 1969, and personally was taught like business techniques from him. And she has coached many successful actors, filmmakers, and musicians. And then we had
Gary Imhoff,
a director and actor. He said he's best known as being a voice actor on the Spider-Man series. He was the Green Goblin / Harry Osborn. And he was also Prince Cornelius in Thumbelina.
Thumbelina.
By
Don Bluth, who I love and you hate.
Okay, that's a good way of summarizing that, yes. The 1980s, Tale of an Inconvenient Bluth.
No. Bad. So Gary's claim to fame was written in the best way.
Oh, yeah. This, I feel, is a little
misdirecting.
At best.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. Yeah. Okay. What did they say?
Here's what it says. Gary Imhoff, director and actor. Award-winning director and actor who has worked with actors who have won 16 Oscars, 72 Emmys, 24 Golden Globes, 30 Tony Awards, and have 22 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Okay.
Yeah.
You've worked with them?
Yeah, this is just like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon sort of thing.
That's a ridiculous thing to say.
And that someone like went through and like, okay, well, we're going to like see the people you worked with. And okay, we got a Hollywood Walk of Fame star there.
Yeah.
And, oh, here's another Emmy. And it's just, what a bizarre measure of your success in Hollywood.
Yeah, so I mean, like, he worked with Don Bluth. You know that some of Don Bluth's Golden Globes are in those 24, you know? I mean,
I don't think they needed to do that. He has the most impressive, IMDb list of any of the people here.
That's so weird. And his IMDb, I mean, it's not like he was in a bunch of, like, or had a bunch of big roles in heavy hitting movies.
But he's clearly been a steady working actor.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a person who's getting serious work in LA, which is impressive
enough. So he can rest on his own laurels. It was it was really strange how they advertised him.
39 acting credits on IMDb.
And to his credit, he didn't introduce himself that way. So maybe they just wrote that for him.
Maybe. But when he came in, he was sashaying on that intro like, that's right. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, he's definitely a confident person, but that's the Scientology way.
True.
And then finally, we had Leslie Wells, and she has directed Golden Globe and Emmy Award winners.
At what? To what? Huh? What? Come on. They might have been in high school.
I don't know. But it sounds like maybe she worked with plays or something like that. She did not talk very much during the entirety of the class. It was in the order we introduce you to these folks is the order in which they spoke the most. So we heard a lot from Joyce.
Yep.
A fair amount from Gary and very little from Leslie. To use LRH's numerical system, we'll say 70% of this class is Joyce. 25% is Gary, 5% is Leslie.
Leslie, I tried to find her on IMDb. There are a bunch of Leslie Wells, so wasn't sure which one. But if she's on there, like her photo's not on it, there's only a couple minor credits in it for all of them. So.
Okay. And all of that, I would say, is fine. Whatever. That's fine. You can share good advice.
Yeah. But, when you're going to one of these things and you're new to the industry, you kind of want someone who either has a strong IMDb, so you're like, okay, now I get it. Mm-hmm. Or you want them to explain what it is they do. Like being so vague as to say I've coached Emmy award-winning actors is so vague that I'm just like, what do I trust you about? I have no idea.
That's fair. And you showed me a list of Scientology working actors, and it's really not as big of a list as I think we've all been kind of led to believe.
Yeah.
There are some big name celebrities that work for the church or are affiliated with the church, I should say. Mm-hmm. But it's not this extensive list. So on the other hand, I can see it'd be hard to every week, they seem to offer the class on a weekly basis. It'd be hard to bring in big heavy hitters for each intro class, three of them.
But hang on. Like if a university were like, we have shitty professors because we don't have good ones.
Yeah. then don't offer the class.
Yeah, don't offer the class.
All right. I was willing to give them a pass on that.
But yeah, you make we probably point. Should because, you know, they haven't even started talking. So fair enough. Oh, and speaking of actors who are Scientologists, I also couldn't find a single Oscar given to a Scientologist for acting.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting.
I'm not saying there are none, but I couldn't find any.
Right. There are other awards given to people who work in other parts of the business.
Right.
But not acting. Interesting. So they went around and they had each person kind of introduce themselves and say what their current experience is and kind of what they want to do. And pretty much everyone in the room wanted to be an actor.
Mm-hmm, except you.
I was the one standout.
Mine was very slightly left of that. Mm-hmm. But everyone else was literally just like, yeah, I'm another actor.
Mm-hmm, yes. And then they kind of went around again and asked people to talk about their goals and what it is that they really want to do. So this filled up a lot of time, just kind of going through the room and having each person say that. And then they kept asking each person, do you have an agent? Do you have an agent? Do you have an agent?
Yeah, which also, like, if someone had an agent, they, you know, they wouldn't be there. And you should know that.
Right, right. So, yeah, you talked about your goals to write and perform. I talked about my goals to pursue my own side projects. And, yeah, then Joyce launched into her kind of introduction.
Now, let's picture Joyce.
Joyce, okay.
Oh, boy.
So she's a tall, willowy woman, probably in her 70s.
Yeah, I think late 60s, early 70s.
With
red,
like
red hair, like dyed red auburn hair.
Yeah, very clearly dyed red hair, maybe a wig.
Maybe. She also had that, it's actually a trait that I sort of admire in older women who can pull it off, this sort of like elegance, like she wears wraps.
Oh, yes.
And a beautiful long silver necklace. You know.
She has poise for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And speaks in just this very, you know, like everything I say is really important.
Oh, yes. And I could float away on a cloud any second now.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. And she was annoying.
Oh, she really was.
I mean,
I found her and Gary annoying. You only found Joyce.
I like
annoying.
Gary. Yeah, I
thought they were both annoying.
I found Joyce incredibly annoying.
But Joyce was definitely, we can agree, the most annoying.
She dropped a lot of Scientology lingo. Clearly, she'd been in it very closely for many years. Yeah, everything that she said, she would treat with intense awe. Like, I'm so impressed with what I just said. Didn't matter how simple it was, it would just be this pause and wait for it all to soak in.
And then like ask you a rhetorical question about whether you understood the gravity of what she just said.
Every other sentence ended with, you follow? And then sometimes she'd throw in, you understand? You understand what I'm saying? But the you follow like started to really annoy me. And then she would find a person and just like speak directly into their eyes and kind of confront them on something. And like she'd be playing this one-sided conversation where you have no idea where she's going with this. So you don't know how to respond.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. That's a pet peeve of both of ours.
Yeah.
And so then she asks you this sort of thing, you know, like, and where are you headed? And it's like, what do you want?
How can I answer this so you don't humiliate me automatically?
You need to be on a gradient. Am I right? You follow?
Yes. People are just like so eager to just like give her what she wants.
And I think both you and I started talking back a little bit, which oddly enough, I think kind of won us a little bit of favor with her.
Yeah, she kept like actually laughing at us. At one point, she like grabbed me by both shoulders and she was like, you're a little scoundrel.
You're a daydreamer. She said that, didn't she?
No. When everyone went around and said their goals, some people like didn't really know how to put a finger on it. And there's also this phenomenon of 20 people have already said the same thing I'm about to say. So I want to say it a little differently.
Right.
Just for
what are
everybody
the right synonyms
the
I can use? Sure.
Yeah. You know, so then people are getting like a little vaguer or trying to add like some little detail just to like make it a little more interesting. And then she would like dig into those and be like, and what are you doing about that? Oh, that's so interesting. So you don't just want to be an actor. You like comedy, you know, and it's like, this person was just...
And taking one small word and extrapolating this big inference about a person. And I would say the most annoying trait is that she would just stop every now and then to kind of like laugh internally.
Yes, this was so bizarre. I don't know if internally is even the word. I mean, she would like stop.
She'd be in the middle of a sentence.
Laugh and then double over. Not double over as in like guffawing, but silently laughed to the point that her whole body would fold. And then she still
her eyes closed in rapture at whatever this internal joke is that's going on in her head.
Sometimes glance at the two people behind her, and Gary might give her like a polite like.
Yeah, she'd give them this long, meaningful look. And then she turned back to us, and all of this would take about 10 seconds.
Right.
And she'd be like, I'm sorry, it's just, it's very funny, and I can't explain it. It's an inside joke. Like, yeah. What? What are you
and
doing?
And at one point, she said, it's just that Gary and I have been trying to set this up for so long. Which just like was a little too much peering behind the curtain. I was like, don't tell me that you've had trouble setting up your free conference at the Church of Scientology.
This happened continually throughout the class where she would just stop us all for 10 seconds so we could watch her have this little moment.
Yeah, it was so weird. And you could just tell like how much she and Gary were just loving being the experts of this room.
They were in love with each other and with themselves. Mm-hmm. And yes, she kept stopping to say, oh, I'm sorry, I interrupt a lot, but I mean, I'm a feisty one.
I'm a firebrand. Oh, God. Shut up.
So as much as I hate to say it, she was incredibly irritating.
Uh-huh. Oh, and there is one girl who somehow, like, didn't pick up the memo of the room, which is like, think of what you want to do and say it confidently. So when they got to her, she's like, I don't know. I admit I'm kind of like a little floundering and... You know, I'm 19, I just moved here, and I know I want to be a performer, but like,
Oh,
God. Oh, boy. What a mistake. How dare you be 19? How dare you? So they like hone in on this. You need to decide. You need to take a stand to be like, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to do. And then someone said to her, is there someone really negative in your life?
Oh, yes.
And she said, yeah. And they were like, okay. And then they all look at each other and nod knowingly.
Yeah, we know what they're nodding at. There's an SP in her life.
Okay, yeah, there's an SP. She's a potential trouble source. We probably shouldn't be talking to her. Okay.
And so she started right off the bat with, this is all about this book.
Yeah, The Problems of Work by L. Ron Hubbard.
Wasn't making any bones about this. This is the Scientology Celebrity Center, and we're going to teach you about Scientology.
Right.
They weren't trying to pretend like, oh, these are just general acting roles. Like, this is tech. From L. Ron Hubbard.
Right. And they didn't frame it as a religious thing, but yeah, it was very clear, like, you're going to learn how these tools can help
you. Yeah, these are tools, and you need to learn them. So she started out with a couple quotes from Hubbard about work itself, and then she introduced us to the ARC triangle right off the bat, mm-hmm. and there was a big whiteboard at the front, so she drew the large triangle and labeled it ARC,
uh-huh.
and she asked, have any of you heard of the ARC triangle? And I said, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned to me, well, how do you know about the ARC triangle? I said, I read that book. Uh-huh. And she was very impressed with that. Oh, well.
Did she come and touch you?
No. Should she have?
Oh, I just felt that she came and touched me a lot. And we were both sitting in the front row. So I wondered if she came and touched you.
I don't know
you.
If I was touched by Joyce.
I was.
Well, fancy.
Emotionally that builds, and physically.
That shows affinity.
It does. So we were told that the ARC triangle is the basis for everything. It's how you communicate with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, if you listen to a previous episode, you know what the ARC triangle is, so we won't go.
So they retold
all,
everything we said in the episode, but just very slowly.
Yeah.
And self-importantly.
Drew it on the board. Asked a lot of rhetorical questions where it wasn't clear what they were asking. And so I just kept saying triangles as the answer to everything.
Yeah, that got a good laugh one time. She was taking too long to finish the sentence. You should understand communication and affinity and reality and you threw in triangles. Everybody burst out laughing.
Oh, good.
That was awesome. When she was,
I'm glad you're remembering my laugh lines, too.
See?
I appreciate
that's
it.
I'm equal opportunity laugh line remember.
Oh, and there was one point where she was looking at the triangle and she was like, do you see how this will help you in front of casting directors, in front of everyone? And I like looked at the room and everyone was like nodding vigorously. Uh-huh. I was like, no, we're not getting anything out of this. What?
That would happen constantly. She'd punctuate very obvious observation with, do you understand how this relates to the mm-hmm. industry? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes it wasn't so much that like this won't help as like, yeah, this would help to implement, but anyone would know that.
Yeah, it all came down to put yourself out there.
Put yourself out there.
Be you. Be the honest you.
And find out what they want and try to see how that matches what you want.
Yeah. And get started.
Yeah.
Don't sit around.
Focus.
Yeah. Okay. That's all great. But we said that in less than a minute.
Right. Right.
This class was nearly 2 hours. Oh. Actually, yeah, I think it was a little over 2 hours we were there. It not even including the late start time.
Ross.
Yes.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, I think so.
But you know what's also interesting to me?
Doggies.
Yes. Oh, you're right. I wish that I could listen to a show about doggies right now.
Oh, well, here's one.
I'm Allegra Ringo, a dog owner.
And I'm Renee Colbert, a dog wanter. And we host a show called Can I Pet Your Dog? The podcast for unapologetic dog lovers.
You can find us every Tuesday on MaximumFun.org or on iTunes.
So, now what is this? Is it just a podcast where all we do is talk about dogs?
Yeah, sort of. We definitely have a segment called Dogs We Met This Week, where we tell you about, you know, dogs we met this week. We also have a segment called Dog Heroes, as well as Cool Dog Tech and Stupid Dog Tech.
We also have some of your favorite celebrities. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who did Hamilton, has been a guest. We've got Leslie Margarita.
We've had Nicole Byer, Ann Wheaton, all the best dog-related celebrities. So check us out every Tuesday on MaximumFun.org or on iTunes.
Can I pet your dog?
Can I pet your dog?
With Renee and Allegra.
C-I-P-Y-D.
Gary jumped in with a little story. I think it was to emphasize one of those points. Maybe it was. Anyways, he was talking about, oh yeah, the power of intention behind a message, behind sharing information. That was it. And he was saying that, like, this might be metaphysical. When I need to open my garage door, like, I hit the button in my car. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not paying attention, if I'm just doing other things or having a conversation, the door won't open. But if I then stop and think, I want the door to open, and I push the button, it opens.
Yes. And then he even said, now, of course, you could explain this as like, oh, when I'm looking at it, I push it more directly or harder or whatever.
It was because, yeah, you threw out, like you said.
Oh, I did?
Well, have you tried pushing the button a little harder? Maybe that has something to do with it.
It completely is him just like being like, well, you could explain it, but no.
No,
it was me. Okay.
Yeah, and then he said, like, I mean, if you're a more scientific thinker like you, then that could be it. And he kind of like jokingly realized that maybe that was a silly story. They talked about the tone scale, gave a lot of examples.
Read us a particular letter that you may recall.
Yeah. That was great.
So Gary read us a letter to George Roy Hill, who directed The Sting. And it's a real letter. He didn't tell us who it was written by.
Mm-hmm. I'd never heard this before, had you?
Me neither, no.
This is great.
I looked it up. It's a real letter. And it's someone writing to this director and saying, I'm 18 years old and I want you to discover me. And
I'm not a particularly good looking guy, but, you know, I'm really entertaining and I should be known just beyond my high school.
Right.
And we could do this multiple ways. You could find me or I could, you know.
Audition for you.
Exactly.
And it's very tongue in cheek. You can tell this person is being funny. And he keeps saying, like, you could discover me and blammo, I'm a star. And he kept saying that. Real cute. And then at the end, it's signed Thomas J. Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
Oh, and we all
And it's so consistent too with what, you know, the personality of Tom Hanks that we've always thought of him having. So yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. Now here's the thing.
Okay.
Real letter, but he never worked with that director.
Really?
So one, you know, I mean, it's good that Tom Hanks had that attitude, but you can't really say that this letter won him anything.
Okay.
But my question
is, it shows a mindset though that clearly led to his success.
That much I'll allow.
Another important note. Not a Scientologist, Tom Hanks.
Ah, true. But also, I just wonder why this letter's still around. If the director never hired him and never, like, answered the letter, why would he keep it?
Because
he just thought it was funny?
Yeah, maybe he liked this precocious kid and he just happened to have it or discover it later when Tom Hanks became a big actor.
Yeah, I mean, it seems possible.
Maybe he passed it around town and everybody's like, we gotta hire this kid.
Maybe. And then they did. Actually, I think he went to Sacramento State.
Really?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like Tom Hanks.
Me too. And you know what? He's rumored to be a very nice guy.
Guy's got class.
Shows up to work in a suit and a tie.
Does he now?
Yeah, apparently he goes to set every day in a suit and a tie.
So I thought those moments were the best moments of the class, where they were sharing like a real life Hollywood story. They're good and motivational. Gary gave one example. He talked about someone that he works with who's great at what he does, but is just a really miserable person to work with. Like, he'll kind of yell at everybody. And he had sent this angry email where he was just screaming in all caps at Gary. Gary said that he just wanted to kill him at the time. When he went to work with this guy again, his wife said, okay, either you can work with this guy again or we can get a divorce because you were just miserable to be with when you're working with this guy. So that's how bad this was. He gave the story about how he got this email or screamail, as I had called it, where he stopped and just took a moment to say, okay, well, what's the real communication here? What's he actually saying? Okay, he doesn't want this girl to sit on this bench. Okay. All right, that's fine. He could have just said that, but that's what he's actually getting at here. And, you know, I really respect his decisions. You know, we're in sync on a lot of things. I'm building affinity now. And then I wrote back and I answered like his actual communication. And he was like, that's great. Perfect.
Okay, great.
Story told through the lens of ARC.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. If that's what helped you get there, great.
So Joyce told us that these aren't Hubbard inventions. They're just universal truths that he discovered.
Oh, okay.
Long dramatic pause. Willowy hand gesture.
That's
internal laughter.
That's so the sort of fake modesty of like prophets, you know. Oh, well, it's not me. It's just God's word working through me for the first time in human history.
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
Consistent with 50,000 years of human intelligence.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Capped in the last 25 years by L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right, sweetheart.
Oh, she kept telling us that it's your confront. You have to increase your confront.
Oh, man.
Thanks.
What does that mean?
That's really helpful. Again, that's just like how you put yourself out there and how you interact with others. Okay. But it's just like she's so steeped in the Scientology talk, she can't turn it off.
Right.
Doesn't realize that other people don't talk about confronts and upsets.
Right.
She singled me out at that point when she said, did some of these tools help you, Ross? I'd just taken the class like a month beforehand.
Right.
It's not going to change my life or anything.
But also, what are you going to say? No?
Yeah, exactly. So many of these things are like, they throw out this rhetorical question. And if you said no, you'd just be lengthening the class by another 5 minutes.
True.
Until they get you to a point where you say yes anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid.
It's just like when we did all that auditing about my dog and then they're like, well, how are you doing? And I'm like, oh, good. You know, really good.
Big mistake.
It's still a sad event, but I feel better about it. No.
Don't be honest.
You go back in there until you feel great.
Gary says the mistake is to think that either you have it or you don't. You make you a star. So we are in control of our own destiny. That's another important lesson for all of you would-be actors out there. It's not that some people have this special thing. It's just that you need to control your destiny.
Couldn't those both be true?
We learned about start, change, stop.
Start, change, stop is so bizarre.
And so just like obvious.
Yeah, it's either obvious or nonsensical. There's no in between.
Joyce did that really annoying thing where she had this woman stand up and then sit down. And she said, see, she did exactly what I told her, but she did it with her body. But I'd built up the affinity that she would do what I told her to do. Whoa.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Ugh, she's following along because you're teaching the class.
Yeah. And also, it puts that person in such a weird position because when they're doing all this mind fucking, you know, you're thinking like, oh, am I supposed to just sit here because that's my own volition? Maybe I'm supposed to like not do what she's saying. Okay, no, maybe I should do what she's saying. I should do it confidently. Oh, no, maybe, you're just like playing this bizarre
game. And it could go any which way depending on what point they're trying to make at that moment. And they're conflicting.
It's and then you find annoying. Out, oh, I won because I was your puppet. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
You did exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, that really does not play into anyone's hand except for the instructor at that point. There was another like real life example of Josh Logan. I guess he was the director of South Pacific and some other films. And there was someone who wanted to work with him. I think a current Scientologist, Milton, I think was the name. So he had done all this research in pre-internet days to find out like when Logan went to work with a great Russian artist, like exactly which day he left and what steamship he left on and when he arrived. And then he wrote a telegram to Logan and said, you know, on this date at this time, this young future director met this great artist and now me shall meet you. And then Logan was impressed and then they became collaborators. So in that sense, it actually did work out into a working relationship. So good. Another good example. Same message, which is put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And dare to do a little extra effort to build affinity with the person.
Generally a good idea. But let me tell you a story about that not working out. So when I was at the Groundlings, okay, there was...
I thought we're only supposed to hear the success stories on the far right end of the bell curve. Are you trying to tell me another story?
Yeah, there's more. There's more to this.
Are you saying that reality comes crashing in sometimes?
Sometimes.
That life is hard?
So when I was at the Groundlings, there was a guy who told me this story about how he went out for this part and like he just knew as he was going out, he knew like this was written for me. This is perfect for me. He like matched the type perfectly and it so resonated with his life or whatever. So he goes, he auditions, and he can just tell they're not into him.
Okay.
So as he's leaving, he's thinking like, oh, I should turn around and tell them to give me an audition again, but he doesn't. He walks out the door and then he's like, oh, I regret not doing that. So as the next actor goes in, he like comes in during that actor's audition. And he's like, you have to see me again. This part's for me. And of course, now they're just like, you're a dick. So they said, you know, you already had your audition and we'll call you if it's a match. So as he's telling me this story, which is now a couple days later, he's like, so I went outside and I sat in their lobby and I just planted myself on the floor. And every time they came out, I said, I'm not leaving until you see me again.
Oh no.
They left. They eventually just packed up.
Okay.
Walked right by him and left
him there.
He was like telling me this story as like a look what a good job I did. And I was like, well, did they call? And he's like, no, but I just like knew I did the right thing. Because I did it another time. And then he tells you the story about showing up to set a couple days after he'd been an extra and showing up with like chocolates and flowers and being like, I have to see the director. I have to give him this gift. And he's just like being a real pain.
Oh, at some point, you're just a creepy stalker.
Yeah, yeah. And it didn't sound like that.
There's a fine line here.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't sound like that ended up great either.
Okay.
So listen, sometimes it works out. I'm not saying it doesn't. But yeah, it's not just like some cut and dry rule where if you like think outside the box, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. This is kind of like The Secret. I know we haven't really fully talked about that, but where they just present these happy, shiny people who have succeeded, but we're not looking at all the people who have failed using the exact same approach.
Right.
Yeah. I always picture a bell curve going on.
Mm-hmm.
Think of that in your head. And which part of the bell curve are you looking at when they are giving you this happy presentation?
Right.
So they had us do a quick icebreaker. We talked to the people next to us to build affinity.
Oh, that's right. Right. I talked to the woman behind me.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no. What?
So the idea was to find affinity by figuring out something that you both agree on.
Right.
But she didn't have much to say. And then she just
started... Trump supporter.
No. But she started kind of listing off hobbies that don't totally resonate with me. And I was like, okay, you know, not that. Oh, race car driving, huh? You know. And then... She said that she does really like her job because she works from home and she hates the 9-to-5 workaday world. She likes being completely in control of her schedule. And I was like, oh, I'm totally like that. I like to have my own projects. I like to be in total control, not go to an office from
workaday world.
And then, yeah. And so I was like, there it is, right? We have affinity. And she looked so disappointed.
What?
Yeah. No. She was just like, no, that's not a good one. And
oh no,
yeah, and then it was over and we had to sit down. And I felt like I'd really let her down.
Oh man, all the tone scales went crashing there.
Yeah.
Boy, well, I talked to the lady next to me and she was a ballet instructor.
Ooh.
And I asked her if my son and I could credibly get to a point where we could do the splits as men who, you know, are not small children. And she said, yes, if you keep working at it.
Okay.
Which we do every night. We
do you really?
Yeah, we practice the splits for 30 seconds.
That's awesome. Good for you guys.
Because my wife had the hots for Jean-Claude Van Damme when she was younger. And she was saying like, he could do the splits. And that really turned her on for some reason.
Now, are you trying to do the splits where the legs are out in front and open or to the side?
Out in front and open.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, Carrie's mimicking this with her arms.
Yeah,
Jean-Claude Van Damme style.
You know, I didn't know which kind.
Not even close yet, but I'm working on it.
Gotcha. That's wonderful, Ross. It's good to have goals.
Thank you. Leslie did jump in to make a good point. She said that Tom Hanks's way is his way. So you can't just like write that same kind of letter. You have to find what you bring to the table and do it your own way.
That's legit advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you, Leslie. And she went back into silence.
It'd be really great to just like copy that letter word for word. Blammo. Sign Carrie copy. Just see what
happens. Please don't use the internet. Please don't use the internet.
Or just change that word. Just make it like Zynga. So that it's like a little harder to Google.
Without the ba, just Zynga.
Yeah.
Joyce at one point said, create, 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 create. She threw in four creates.
Ooh.
Yeah, thought that was pretty awesome. That was a highlight for me. A start point is a start point. Then you have one more point to confront. You follow? In that case, I did not follow. No idea what she was saying there.
Wait, say it again. A start point is just a start point.
A start point is a start point. Then you have one more point to confront. You follow? What? I don't think it made sense in context.
Did anyone respond?
Like, I don't recall.
Yeah.
I think at that point, we definitely wanted her to stop this. Oh, she called out one person and said, "You're hiding your questions from me." And then one of the ladies was like, "Me?" and laughed nervously. And the other one next to her was like, "Me?" Strange and awkward.
There was a same-sex couple in the back. Two women who said something about like, "Oh, this is my beautiful wife or my beautiful partner or whatever."
Right.
And I wondered what was going on in the heads of the instructors.
Oh, yeah. If you get on course,
yeah,
you guys are going to break up.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So at this point, then we had another person come in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Jamie came in.
We'll call her.
She had been in once before just to set things up.
Right.
But this is her big shining moment.
Mm-hmm. And she's wearing her Sea Org uniform, 3-piece suit.
A Caucasian, like most Scientologists.
Curly
blonde hair.
Tall, short, curly blonde hair. A kind of, I don't know, like severe makeup. Like it just felt very hard lined.
Uh-huh. I know what you're saying.
Not a soft person. She looked very hard in appearance, if that makes sense.
I feel like she would try out for roles as like your boss. You know?
Yes.
That would be her type.
Yeah.
She would play Jan on the first season of The Office.
Oh, yeah, totally, Jan. That's a very good analogy. Yes. That kind of person. Then again, you know, just may have been the effects of years of Scientology.
Yeah, could be.
Can do things
Although
to a person.
Although she told us, she said, "Now you don't have to be a Scientologist to be here. I've been here for years and it's never been pushed on me." It's like,
you're Sea Org staff, at least.
What does that mean?
Right.
It's never been pushed on you? Do you just mean you voluntarily did it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of the same.
Not sure what she meant by that. And she was telling us also that there are these courses that we can take that will lead us in these wise ways. And she was like just so overselling it by saying, these are like a bulletproof vest. You need these to survive. The people that I've worked with, if I hadn't taken these courses, I'd probably be dead right now. She said that. And I was looking around like, okay, what? Are any of you buying this? Like, why would you be dead? What? Why would you say that?
You'd risen your hand and said, "Why would you be dead?"
Excuse me. Question: why would you be dead? In what remotely plausible way could that have led to your demise?
Oh my gosh. But doesn't that kind of remind you of your church days and people who would be like, "Boy, if I didn't have Jesus right now, I would be a drug dealer in the streets and I would be shooting up heroin." Do you
right.
hear that stuff a lot?
Oh,
it's
yes.
Like, well, hang on. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'd be killing people.
Right.
Really? Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, you wish you could.
Or conversely, they would say, you know, "Oh, I was having sex with all these women and that just got old and then I found Jesus. And I'm so glad I'm not
doing
that."
So many drugs. Oh, which drugs? Oh, all of them.
You did so many women, huh? Which women? Oh, all of them. So then she posed the $1 million question to us. She had her $1 million question and she stopped to consider the etymology of the $1 million question. I'm not sure where that came from. Where did the $1 million question come from? That is a mystery. And I said, maybe it used to be $64,000.
Uh-huh.
So there was a TV show.
$64,000 pyramid.
And Gary got really excited about this. I kept building affinity with Gary.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, because I would get like, you know, an obscure reference or he'd get mine.
And now you're in a relationship with him.
Yeah, we regularly meet on the slide. Don't tell my wife.
Okay.
Anyway, so we never solved the $1 million question thoroughly.
Because no one effing cared. Everyone's like, we've useless been here 2 hours.
Please useless.
Let us get out of here.
But then she goes around the room again and asks each person, what is it that's stopping you from achieving your goals?
Uh-huh.
Like, what is your main hang up?
Uh-huh.
That's the $1 million question.
Yeah.
But nobody gets $1 million. Again, that's very like clear of someone to say, right? Like, we need to clarify this. No one will actually win $1 million.
Can you imagine?
It is a metaphorical $1 million.
It would be so great if she was, after that, she's like, yep, in every room of 20 people, we pick one new millionaire. And it's Lauren from the middle row.
With that many people, I would go to that class all the time.
Oh, for sure.
Even with the awkward ending we're getting toward.
But Ross,
yes,
one in every five people is a sociopath. So there were at least 4 to 5 sociopaths in that room.
Wait, who says that?
L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, wow. One in five.
One in five.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this class, Joyce said that 30% of society is out to get you.
There you go.
That's even more. Three
so
out of 10.
You've got all the psychopaths and then just a few more people.
But you assured us that only 2.5% are truly
are actually dangerous.
Dangerous.
Says LRH. Hip hip.
Hooray. And this is where Jamie actually gave a start, change, stop example that I thought was kind of helpful. She was giving the example of someone at an audition who, you know, did their best, then went home, but they just kept running it through their mind because they didn't get like a good signal from the auditors, if you will. Mm-hmm. And just kind of keeps obsessing over like, oh, I could have done this better. And this is where she said, that's where you need to stop because you started and you changed, but you never stopped. You're mentally, personally, are still in
You're
that
still
audition.
There. That's fair.
I thought, okay, that's actually kind of a useful way to use the start change.
That actually reminds me of something Bryan Cranston said about auditioning. I'm going to butcher this, but it was basically have a really good time performing it in the room as if that's the only time you'll get to perform it and just have a blast, but then leave it.
Yeah, good advice.
Yeah.
They told us about these courses. Joyce was saying that most creative people need to take ups and downs in life, that course, and personal values and integrity. These are essential.
And the ups and downs in life, I don't remember if it was her or if it was some other Scientologist who like described that ad nauseum for us. Your life is like a roller coaster. Okay. We all know the analogy of ups and downs. We don't need this. It seems it's up and you're happy, right?
But it doesn't stay there.
Great. But all of a sudden, maybe right as your highest, you suddenly get low. Yeah, we get it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They also told us then about these courses. So you sign up for a course and you can get the book to go with it. And then you show up there at the Celebrity Center and you can read the book there.
Fun.
And they told us all the hours. So there's like 4 2-hour periods throughout the day. You could show up and read. And then there's someone there to answer your questions.
Great.
Yeah. And then you get to do lots of paperwork. So you read and then you write stuff. Doesn't that sound fun?
Not really.
Usually only takes about 15 to 20 hours.
But as she was so smooth about this because she wasn't making it clear yet that like I'm selling you on these classes. It was just sort of like FYI, that's one thing that happens here. Oh, and now we're going to go around and see what you all need. Mm-hmm. But she's not matching those two things up really. She was so good.
Yeah, it was very clear that this was a practice presentation that she'd done many times.
Yes,
and
for sure.
She had her kind of usual sort of semi-laugh lines that she'd sort of throw out.
And she said, I'm not an actor. I'm someone who helps actors.
Oh, Joyce then chimes in like, oh, well.
Jamie's a wonderful actor.
And then Jamie, you know, demurely says, oh, well, let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
So okay. Many little asides like that in the class. And so, yeah, part of her presentation is then she says, and we're a nonprofit organization.
Not trying to get money from you.
Technically true. Uh-huh. But just when they say that about Scientology, it's like, oh, okay. All right.
Fine.
Nonprofit. Okay. Yeah, fine. And she says, and we've made this very affordable. Per person, the course is only $15,000.
Gary Snickers.
Yeah, exactly. So they start laughing up front. And she's like, oh, you're supposed to wait. Uh-huh. I wanted to see how they all reacted. I mean, maybe it's worth $15,000, but it's only $50. Mm-hmm. And then if you get the book, you end up spending $71.80.
But Ross, what did you say was standing in your way?
I said that it was the perfect being the enemy of the good that I would kind of put off doing a big thing because I wanted to wait till I could do it right.
Uh-huh.
And that moment would always be in the future. And then I would do a lot of smaller things until panic made me do the big thing.
Right.
How about you?
I said I tend to put off things that don't have tangible output, especially if I have to rely on other people. So if it's like, I'm going to send out 10 emails to literary agents, but they might go into the stratosphere and never come back to me. That doesn't feel like I've done something solid that I can hold on to. So instead, I'll do things that I can show for myself, but maybe aren't the things I need to do in that moment.
Right.
I thought this was a pretty clear thing to say, but boy, she got confused.
And she's like, well, I want to sum everything up with a course title. So sounds like you need communication. And you're like, well, that's not really it.
Yeah, and then like try to re-explain it. And she's like, oh.
Well, it might be then relationships, I think she suggested for you.
Like
building ARC.
Okay, Sure.
Yeah, you eventually just kind of agreed to it.
So she's writing down next to everyone's name.
Yeah, she's, what's your name? She's writing it down. And then
writing a little shorthand to herself of what class
they need. A little three-letter abbreviation for the course. And most of them were the communication course, I think.
Yes.
And then there was another one that showed up quite a few times.
I think it was like the something of work.
Maybe two outliers, like one personal values and integrity or something like that. And then Gary made sure to tell her when she was addressing everyone as actors, like, wait, we have one non-actor.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's in animation, so say artists. Uh-huh. She's like, okay, we want to be very inclusive. So she said artists after
And you're like, phew, I was about to walk out. But now,
I felt really like pigeonholed and stereotyped. sweet, sure. Then she really goes into hard sales pitch mode because she gives us the price. And then she said, now who in this room wants to achieve their goals? Okay, what's the answer to that?
No one, actually.
All right, so we all raise our hands. Uh-huh. And who in this room would admit that you need some help to do that? Uh-huh. Okay, all right, fine. Sure.
Yeah.
Now, who in this room thinks that this course would be helpful?
Not really, but all right. I'm not going to be socially awkward and not raise my hand at that.
Right. So she says, okay, well, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to bring in my associate.
She had also gotten us to do, it was really clever. She was like, right at the top of your sheet, I want you to write like this code. And it was the code for the class or whatever, mm-hmm. but just got you in the habit of just taking orders and writing things down on that sheet.
Yes.
So you're just kind of already doing it kind of absentmindedly. And she's like, and put your name down while you're down there. And so by the time you realize like
they've handed us these envelopes and pens to go with the envelopes. And so, we're writing this thing down in like your name.
And then you're like 75% of the way through it when it dawns on you like, oh, I'm signing up. Oh, you're making me sign up.
Right. I got savvy to it a little faster. As you can see, I did not write anything on mine because I saw the big bold letters underneath your name, address, city, zip, phone. There's a big bold yes. Here is my $71.80 for a life improvement course and book.
Yeah.
Enclosed, check one, money order, cash, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, credit card number, expiration date, signature, all on the front of the envelope.
But at no point does she say anything like, if you want to take the class, do A, B, and C.
Oh, no.
It's just do A, B, and C.
Just fill this out. She told one person like, oh, well, if you just want to do the course without getting the book, you can do that. That's $50. So just make a note of that. Yeah,
his friend had the book or something.
It was super awkward. And I'd say this is one of the hardest sales tactics I've seen. And I've sat through a number of timeshare presentations. But, it was like, okay, so all of you fill those out. And then when you're done, hand them in and we'll head over together for refreshments into the next room. Mm-hmm. And so they sit there watching you.
Yeah.
It's super awkward. And you and I are sitting there in the front row. You know, we're looking at each other in these envelopes. I don't want to fill this out.
Right. Like, it asks for your credit card number.
I'm already doing other stuff.
Cash on you.
A few people are like already done and handing theirs in. But yeah, they're just sitting there waiting for you. So uncomfortable and such a hard sales pitch. And so some people start exiting into the next room. And I don't know why this happened, but she turned to us and said, you should go talk to Joyce in the next room.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why.
So Joyce had already gone over there.
I have no idea why we were chosen for the special treatment, but we were like excited because we didn't have to hand in the envelopes right away. So
I think
it
had something to do with us saying we were taking the Dianetics seminar.
Okay. But yeah, we came into Joyce and said, oh, well, they wanted us to come talk to you.
And she had no clue why.
Nor did we. So it's like, oh, well, I don't know. What am I supposed to say to you?
We told her that we were taking the Dianetics seminar at the Blue Org, and she was like, oh, well, I'd rather you took it here, but that's fine.
It's great for creative people.
This is a place for creative people.
So she was encouraging us. So the Celebrity Center itself is a functioning org, and you can take all the classes there.
You told her that you were interested in doing the purification rundown, and she told you that she took the first purification rundown ever.
In the state of Alaska.
Very good.
I like how there was this look of being impressed on your face, and then I said in the state of Alaska, it went away.
Yeah.
But still, good for you. And she told us there's a lot of alcohol there, so it's important to have that. Because I was saying, they've got very fresh air there, but they've got an alcoholism problem. That makes sense. Which speaks to them maybe being a little down on alcohol as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting. That's why you get charged extra for those mimosas.
Also, speaking of Alaska and it being near Canada.
But close enough to see Russia.
Drew and I just went on a cruise to Canada where we saw the Vancouver Scientology org.
Ooh.
But as I was buying our travel size toiletries to go at the CVS, the young man behind the counter said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Canada." And he said, "Oh, cool." And I said, "On a cruise." And he said, "Oh, on the East Coast?" And I said, "No, on the West Coast."
Yeah.
And he thought about that and he said, "Huh, Canada has a West Coast." That's it. That's my whole story.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So at this point, other people are kind of streaming into the room, but Joyce has sort of had her little conversation with us and she's like, "All right, well."
She had us talk to Gary for a second.
Yeah,
we talked to him. And we got some chips and she said, "Just hang on 1 second." And she went and talked to Jamie and then came back and was like, she held my hands in her hands and she said something like, "Go forth, be well."
Wow, I don't remember this meaningful moment.
She was clearly just saying like, "You guys are already in this, like we don't need to put you through the rigmarole."
I might have been stuffing my face with chips.
Okay.
but at that moment we had like our reprieve and we're like, get out.
Yeah.
And so we like quickly get out and we got the hell out of Dodge.
Yep.
We like speed walked down the hallway to the double doors and like, move, get to the car.
Then we did.
And I went right back to the blue building, the LA org, because I was having another meeting to talk about my potential purification rundown.
Right.
And I'd already scheduled that in advance because they forced me to. And so I just went straight back for more Scientology. So yeah, that was like an 8-hour day for me of Scientology.
Goodness.
It was awful.
Just so no one gets too excited, you're not purified.
Why would you say that to them? Why would you dash their potential hopes?
Because I don't want to dash them then. That's my point. I don't want to
build them up.
And then dash their hopes.
Then dash them when they are at their pinnacle.
So like the ups and downs in life. That kind of thing.
Carrie, it's like a roller coaster because the roller coaster will bring you up to the apex, to the very top. But then you don't stay there. You go, we call it down to the trough, the nadir.
Okay, got it. Now I get it.
But then you go right back up again. And you might like flip upside down or do a little like curly Q thing.
See, I think the analogy is running thin now. And then you get to the end and there's like a sound, a psh, and then your seatbelt goes up and then you say, "Hang on here, wait here, please." And
you follow?
Pulled forward and the thing goes, and then you go forward. What's that? Psh. Sound at the end of roller
hydraulics.
Coaster. Ah.
Good old hydraulics.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're very successful industry giants now.
That's true. We are well established thanks to Scientology.
Well, you know what? Between that event and now, I booked and shot my first leading role in a film.
Hey.
But I did not use any of the...
No?
I didn't use a single goddamn thing.
Okay. So you won't give the credit to Scientology.
No, I'm not ready to. But maybe one day. One day I'll see what they did for me.
To be fair, the class description did say that it would be using Scientology tools from the book, The Problems of Work.
Oh yeah, they were upfront about it, no doubt.
We wouldn't necessarily recommend it for anyone wanting to be an actor in Hollywood. I think you probably just got all the useful info you need and then some from this podcast.
I think that's right too. But who knows? Maybe you'll be the next Juliet Lewis.
Or Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh, also, Ross, I wanted to tell you.
What are you going
to
tell me?
Since we recorded the last episode, I read Leah Remini's book.
Yes.
Troublemaker.
Yes.
Very enjoyable. Liked it a lot.
Trouble with a capital T. That rhymes with P.
And that stands for pool. No, it was real fun. I really liked her as a person. Like, she's very sassy. I mean, of course, this is her telling a story, so who knows? But at least in her telling, she just butts heads with people through like her entire tenure in Scientology for decades.
She's not just following along. She's got ideas of her own.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Which eventually take her out of it. But one thing that I noted as I was reading it is that she mentioned the building that we went in for the L. Ron Hubbard Life exhibit. Inside that same building is OSA, who are the people who like go out and do all the spy work for Scientology.
Yes, it's where they emanate from.
Yeah, so we were just below them.
Cool.
They may have pooped above us while we were there.
Above our very heads.
Yeah.
In the fancy bathrooms.
Yeah.
Cool.
It may also be where Miscavige has an office.
So that was our fun investigation of the Scientology Celebrity Center.
Yeah.
Great restaurant. We highly recommend when it reopens in 2018.
If you got confused, by the way, about where Drew went, he only came for the brunch and didn't stay for the...
Yeah, that's true. We never gave him an exit.
Drew didn't just die in the middle of this.
I'm glad you followed up on that. And we'll be back again with more from Scientology. There is still more story to tell.
Can you believe it?
Well, that's it for our show. Our theme music is by Brian Keith Dalton.
Our producer and co-editor is Ian Kramer.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/onrack, which has lots of pictures and us because we comment on things and share pictures and stuff. So go there.
And you can support this investigation and all our investigations by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. And be sure to mention that you listen to our show because that's the only way we get your donation.
Hit that checkbox, please.
Yeah, man.
We have a Twitter where tweets are tweeted, and that is Oh No Podcast.
And we have an iTunes where iTunes reviews are left. That is iTunes.
And also Stitcher and all those other wonderful services where finer podcasts are collected and distributed and disseminated.
We have a Stitcher where it is stitched.
And remember, in the words of L. Ron Hubbard,
not smoking enough will cause lung cancer. If anybody's getting a cancerous activity in the lung, the probabilities are that it's radiation dosage coupled with the fact that he smokes. And what it does is start to run out the radiation dosage, don't you see?
I'm Jesse Thorne, the host of Bullseye. Bullseye's your guide to what's good in pop culture. Every week, I'll sit down with people like Elvis Costello, Elizabeth Banks, and Spike Lee to talk about their creative work and their lives. Find your new favorite TV show, book, movie, or album and gain new insights into the things you already love. That's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.